Well, I don't know about you, but I've been in Christian meetings in the past where I've felt super uncomfortable. Someone's got up to preach the offering. Have you been in them? Put your hand up, you've been in one of them. And it makes you feel really weird. And it sort of has the opposite effect on me. I sort of shut down a bit. It's a bit like when someone comes to my door, charity, they're coming. It's a great charity. They're lovely people. Everything is good. But something about it makes me want to shut the door. Or when I'm leaving a supermarket and there's a big banner and someone's like, "Oh, hello, madam." Why am I a madam? Like, when did that happen? Like, I'm sure I was a miss not very long ago. But underneath it, I think, is a sense of they want my money. Notice the word my money. And our relationship with money is, I don't want to drag it out again, but probably based a lot in our childhoods. And as I was growing up, we did have enough money. We were, I think, quite well off. But I did always understand that we needed to do stuff on the cheap. And I was very aware of this, that we lived a lifestyle above what we could live. I think we're quite aspirational. So there was always this sense of, well, why would you pay that for it when you could do this? Or why would you do that when you could make it? Or you could mend it? Or you could make do? And there was a sense of stretching money as far as it would go. And I think I've taken that into adulthood with a really underlying thing that I must not waste money. It is precious commodity and it is rare. And they talk, don't they, about a poor mindset, that even when people have money, perhaps they've experienced in childhood not having any money and they still live as if they don't have any. I know for my grandparents' age, like, it's quite difficult for them once the water meant to a meter to run a shower. So they put it on for a little bit and then they turn it off and wash them and then they turn it on again because they have that mindset, I mustn't waste the money. Even though they have loads of money. So you're like so frustrated with them. And when I come to money, I could rest on, oh, that's great, Lou. You're being a really good steward of what you have. But if I look a little bit underneath this good practice, I can find often anxiety about spending any money. I can find pride in being frugal. I can find judgmentalism in judging how others have chosen to spend their money. I can find shame in how I've wasted money. I can also find a sense of denial when I don't want to even look at a bank account because I know it's going to raise up temptation and trial, and I've got enough going on. And worse though, I think I noticed recently, I really struggle to enjoy what God has given me. I get a sense that I'm thinking what God has given me, he wasted it. Isn't that bizarre that we start with something good and it can often have a lot underneath it? So I don't know about you. It could be that you spend your life checking your banking app. It's a bit tempting, isn't it? Some of you may have checked it already this morning. I don't know. You would be reading the passage, but instead you just checked. It could be that your mood is very affected by your bank balance. You could be a bury your head. You could be, I'm struggling to balance my finances. I've just started off. Maybe you've left home and you're not really sure. Or it could be that you're still not managing to do that. And if that's you, I looked up some statistics and I found this from, it was a financial capability strategy for the UK, I think commissioned by the government at some point. And that found that 39% of adults didn't feel confident in managing their money. That is a lot, isn't it? And I think we do have this weird relationship. We also live with money guilt. Guilt about how we've spent it in the past. We should have known better. We should do this. We shouldn't do that. We can feel shame out of debt. We can, all sorts of bad comes in. Jealousy, of course, is there as well about what we don't have. And then there's rich guilt as well. The fact that we are in the top 5% of the world's richest people. Some of us will be in the top 3%. Ultimately, meaning that at least 95% of the world have less than us. And so we've got all these weird and wonderful things going on in our minds. And whether we have a good or bad relationship, we know that money is really strong. Our culture is promising security, happiness, self-worth through it. I don't think it's any accident that Jesus said you can't serve two masters. It's God or money. And he was really bringing out that sense that money is an idol. And it is a really strong one. And it's one that we are perhaps are battling. When you make something an idol, of course, you put your trust in it. You desire it. And you make sacrifices for it. And we can see how that would happen. Jesus said in Luke, he's quite strong. Watch out, be on your guard about all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in abundance of possessions. And when we read that, it is strong, but it can sort of throw us a bit into this. Well, I will just reject everything. I will live a life of poverty. But having money is not a sin. Not everyone is called to give all their money away, although we do know examples of that in the Bible, and some people are called to a life of poverty. But it's rather our relationship with money that counts, isn't it? This is what Jesus is getting to. Money can control us, condemn us, master us, and Jesus wants us to live lives that are free from any of that. So last week we looked at biblical principle of tithing. This week we're going to look at the biblical principle of first fruits. Okay? So thinking about first fruits, we see this integrated when the law comes in Leviticus. We see first fruits cropping up in all the major kind of harvesty festival sorts of things. It's an example of the wave offering. If you ever wondered what the wave offering was, you know, hi God. They would take some sheaves from the harvest and sort of just bring it before the Lord. we don't see that anymore, but it's interesting. We see examples of it, though, pre-law, right back in Cain and Abel, don't we? When it says, I think I've got this one, about Cain and Abel, when Cain brought some of the fruits of the soil as an offering to the Lord, but Abel brought the fat portions, that being the best bit, and the firstborn. So they kind of bring with a different attitude, don't they? And this kind of idea of the best and the first comes quite strongly through when we think about first fruits. So we're going to look at two passages, but the first one we're going to look at is in Deuteronomy, because that's going to be sort of our springboard passage for this week. As you know, Phil started there and he said, well, I hope they don't mind if I go somewhere else. Well, I'm really pleased he did. So let's look at Deuteronomy chapter 26 as a starting point, and it's entitled First Fruits and Tithes. We're going to start at verse 1. Okay, it says, when you have entered the land that the Lord your God is giving, you, as an inheritance, and have taken possession of it and have settled in it, take some of the first fruits of all that you produce from the soil of the land that the Lord the God is giving you, and put them in a basket. Then go to the place where the Lord your God will choose as a dwelling for his name, and say to the priests in office at the time, I declare today to the Lord your God that I have come to the land the Lord swore to our ancestors to give us. The priest shall take the basket from your hands and set it down in front of the altar of the Lord your God. Then you shall declare before the Lord your God, my father was a wandering Aramean, And he went down into Egypt with a few people and lived there and became a great nation, powerful and numerous. But the Egyptians ill-treated us and made us suffer, subjecting us to harsh labor. Then we cried out to the Lord, the God of our ancestors, and the Lord heard our voice and saw our misery, toil and oppression. So the Lord brought us up out of Egypt with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. With great terror and in signs and wonders, he brought us this place and gave us this land, a land flowing with milk and honey. And now I bring the firstborn of the soil to the Lord. Lord, have given me. Place the basket before the Lord your God and bow down before him. Then you and the Levites and the foreigners residing among you shall rejoice in all the good things that the Lord your God has given you and your household. So that's where we're going to start. So the book of Deuteronomy was read every 7 years. And it was sort of a time of rebooting Israel. So they'd read back through the law, what had happened, debts would be cancelled, and they would have this massive festival. And it was a place of abundant blessing. Phil began to talk last week just about some of the festivals and thinking about tithing, about how much obscene amount of blessing that God would give them. And they'd bring this and then they'd eat it and celebrate together. It was a time when they would remember that God had, what God had promised to Abraham. They'd remember their journey, abundant blessing, that they'd come into this land flowing with milk and honey. And that means rich and luxurious. And I was thinking about this. You know, God gives us the best. He always gives us the best. But sometimes we struggle with this, don't we? We feel a little bit, we know that we're unworthy, and so we struggle with it. Like, why would he give me that? Because, you know, I'm just nobody. And yet, when we look at Jesus, we see that he gives us his best. His only best is his son. That's what who he has given us already. And I don't know about you, but maybe you sit in that camp where you think, I know I have Jesus, but probably generally he just gave it to everybody, gave himself to everybody. And I've just sort of snuck in somehow. I'm just sort of like on the edge, like, yeah, well, that sort of, you know, happens. But if he was to actually give me something, well, why would he do that? I know once when I was traveling and I was upgraded to first class, it was a huge plane, you know, one of those where you go on the stairs, upstairs to first class. And I was dressed in traveling gear, you know, old trousers, an old T-shirt, bit of a backpack, looking like a bag of whatever. And I was sent up to first class in this luxurious eight kind of chair area with wine waiters and silver service, and you know, your chair goes into a lovely bed, and the wine waiter comes around and goes, which would you like from the wine? And I was so out of my depth, you know, all the time I'm thinking, I don't belong here, I don't deserve it, what has happened? And yet this is how God treats us. You know, that's just minor compared to what God has done for us through Jesus. That he has given us, he has adopted us. He's taken us into his family. He's made us a child of God. And yet we say these things like, oh, you know, that's sort of just happened because it's become so familiar. But even just going up to first class, I felt like I just don't belong here at all. And often when I'm given stuff, lavish gifts, for example, that childhood teaching about waste of money comes in because I think, well, that isn't what I would have spent the money on. I'm not even able sometimes to accept the gift. Has this ever happened to you? I don't know, that you've been given something so generous by someone and you're thinking, you're already in the kind of, well, that could have done that. You know, I don't deserve it. And therefore you're not able to enjoy it. And I wonder if a bit of this comes into our faith, comes into our thinking about God, that we're almost saying, I don't deserve it. And therefore, we can't really enjoy what God has given us. We're looking at these instructions for first fruits. And the main festival for first fruits came during the Passover. So if you think about like the three times of big festivals. And the first one, obviously, first fruits comes at the first, and that would be Passover. And this would be like the barley harvest. It would happen. And it would be a time of Passover, so remembering what God has done, this kind of the idea that we've seen it read already. You know, I agree, I admit that my ancestors were this and God has brought me into this land. And it would, the festival of first fruits would take place on the day after the Sabbath, so on the Sunday. The Lord's Day. And of course, the New Testament writers don't miss this at all, do they? When Jesus rises on that day, they are very quick to point out that he's the first fruits. We see it in these passages. In Corinthians, it talks about Jesus being the first fruits of those who rise from the dead. And then he talks about the Holy Spirit being the first fruits of what is to come. God, us being in that place where we are totally in his presence and surrounded by his love. So they would gather in the first bits of the harvest, potentially even if it wasn't ripe, and they would have to take this to the Lord before they were allowed to eat anything. Now, I don't know about you, but in our house, even when we come to praying before a meal, we start on a major battle over who has eaten before we've even got to prayer. Because I don't know about you, but sometimes, occasionally, I'm not naming names, half the dinner is gone and I haven't even sat down yet. Some people anyway. And then I was thinking about, you know, like in my garden, when the first raspberries appear in the spring. I don't know about you, but it's such a joy, isn't it? Like, I just think, oh, I just want to eat that raspberry. And before I've even thought about it, I've eaten the raspberry. Now, imagine you've been living the whole winter on last year's grain, and you know there's not much about if you're in that kind of agricultural farming community, and you're kind of getting to the end of the apples that you've wrapped up, and maybe now you're just really just down to parsnips and life's looking a bit miserable. And here you've got the first fruits and your field is starting to produce fruit. And you're not to touch it until this festival has happened. So it could be green, it could be ripe, but you are not to start eating it. And it'd be pretty hard to hold back, wouldn't it? Because you'd want to. And the first fruits, it isn't a tithe. You know, it's not a kind of, oh, this is what God's given me. I'm now going to calculate what's a reasonable proportion to give away, what feels right and are, you know, thoughtful. This is symbolic. You know, this isn't a tithe of it. This is just, I'm going to take the very first things and I'm going to take them to the Lord. It's where James says in Jesus' brother, he writes, every good and perfect gift is from above. It's a moment of kind of being grounded in the truth. You give thanks. You say, this harvest, this what is about to come, the good fruit that you're about to provide is entirely from you. So I wonder if the first fruits could help us perhaps more in our relationship with money. In Acts 17, we read that God gives us everything, life, breath, and everything else. He does not need any help from them. He has everything he needs. I guess that's the first reminder, isn't it? It reminds us, like Paul said last week, that God doesn't need anything from us. In fact, us bringing a couple of pence from our pay packet at the beginning and saying, God, this is yours, is not what he needs. And it certainly didn't feel potentially in the first fruits like a lavish gift. But it's more about that attitude, isn't it, that you're starting with, that I will not touch this until I've acknowledged what you've done, who you are, and your goodness and your generosity towards me. So let's use those principles of first fruits to help us. Firstly, practicing principles of first fruits can help us live with peace in our hearts. We can live free from worry, knowing that ultimately, everything we have is from God. We bring nothing in, we take nothing out. In a sense, it is temporarily ours to enjoy. And the one who has provided what we have so far will continue to provide for us. He is generous and loving. It means that when things happen, our boiler breaks, our car is stolen, we lose our jobs, that we can rest in that. We can say, God has given me everything I have, and I trust he will provide for me. Secondly, it helps us live, so firstly, in a place of peace. Secondly, in a place of trust. That we continue to trust that God's promises are faithful. When throughout this, we see God say, when you have entered the land, when this has happened, so when you have your new job, when you have, been given a pay rise, when you have been given a gift of a holiday by someone, when you have, we can live there and acknowledge God is faithful. He loves us, he provides for us, and he will continue to do so. It is so easy to fall into that camp where we think, I have this because I worked hard. I have this because I did this. Yes, but where do those things ultimately come from? The brain that God gave you, the opportunities you had to keep in a place of trust. And thirdly, so it gives us, the principle can help us live with peace, trust, and finally joy. The offering of first fruit reminds us that God is generous and he wants the best for us. In Romans we read, he who did not spare his own son but gave him up for us all, how will he not also along with him graciously give us all things? If God gave us his best, what is there he will not give us? In Matthew we read where Jesus says, seek first the kingdom and I'll take care of everything else. Well, that's how I've read it anyway. When I first became a believer, that verse came to me again and again and again. In so much so, I made it my life verse. I still go back to it now. Seek first the kingdom. Seek what he wants, what he desires for his good, and let him take care of everything else. Live in that place of peace and trust and joy. And that's the bit I think I sometimes miss. We recall the very first lie of Satan to Adam and Eve in the garden, who had everything they needed, were blessed and provided for. They knew that place of walking with God in the garden, abundant supply of everything they needed in this idyllic place. And yet Satan brings them the lie that God is withholding something from them. God withholds nothing from us because he gives us himself. So, what might we do? What kind of things could we do to practice the principle of first fruits? After all, we're not farmers anymore. So what principles can we take? Well, we've talked about meals, giving thanks before them. Perhaps we give the best part of our day. You know, it's an old-fashioned thing in some respects to start our day with a quiet time. But even to start that first moment and to acknowledge, God, this is the day that you have made, and I will rejoice and be glad in it, enables us to see that everything that happens from that moment on is from him, and we want to glorify him in it. What about your finances? When we take up the offering, I don't know about you, but I often find myself just ignoring it. Because it goes straight out my account. It's gone. I wonder if there's some way we could instigate a first fruit in that. Is there a way you could just put a coin in? Because I think there's something reminding us when we physically give. Maybe it's not a whole thing, but maybe we could say, once a month, I'm going to put some physical money in as a reminder to me, I want to thank you, God, for all that you've given me. What about when you get your paycheck? How could you practice principles of first fruit there? Could you give thanks at that moment? Could you start the month with a really nice meal with your family? Or does that feel too luxurious? Like, God's given you it. Enjoy it. What about if you start a new venture? I started a little one this year, and when the first bit of money came in, it wasn't much. I thought, well, how can I practice the principles of first fruit? So I sort of agonized with this for a while, and I had a couple of ideas. I could take some people out for coffee and cake who maybe wouldn't be able to. In the end, I bought a gift for somebody as a blessing. But I was starting to think, oh, how can I start this little venture? First fruits to you, God. Thank you. This is for you. Because when we do that, we're offering everything to come. Remember, in our first fruits, they would bring the first fruits before the Lord as an offering. And then that was a symbol that every bit of the harvest was going to be his. So, I think we'll finish there. But God is so generous. You might want to just pause for a minute and think about how you could instigate this principle of first fruits into your life. Because we want to be free from that control of money. We want to be thankful for what God's given us. And just in the same principle that we love because he first loved us. Generosity flows out of accepting how generous God has been to us. We're going to listen to a song. And during that time, you just might want to be reflecting and thinking, is first fruit something you already do? Or is it something you might like to consider? Okay, we'll stop there.